Hello, you guys.
Log Talk Radio.
Again, hello, you guys. This is Salita with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman. And as you can hear, I am sounding a lot better than I've sounded in the last couple of days. I'm getting better. Well, I want to say thank you to all my listeners out there, you guys. I've had a great time with this book, you guys. We're talking about sexual abuse of power in the Black church, sexual misconduct in African American churches by Dr. Donna Matthews, which to me is a very awesome book. And if you get an opportunity, I would love for you guys to get a hold of this. You can get it on Amazon.com. And I think, yeah, Amazon.com. Very, very, very good book. Okay, so far, we've established that there are some broken down communication. There's a big communication gap, with the idea of things that we allow to happen, which a lot of times we keep a hush-hush on what's going on in the church. We talked about, and I want to, like I said at the end, I want to go back to some of the definitions of some of these words that we can get familiar with that Dr. Matthews has taught us. We talked about the idea that there was a preacher or pastor that considered himself Dr. Charisma, and he's sitting around in his little boys group talking about how many women in the church that he's actually had relationships with, and it's bragging. And so he teaches the younger guys who are coming into the ministry and teaching them that, hey, the first thing you need to do is see which one you can get with first, even though these are married men, which, hey, you know, to each his own. Please do not get the impression that I'm judging. I am not judging anybody if that's what you choose to do, but you have to be very, very careful when you're dealing with someone else's spirit and somebody else's soul, and that's what you're doing as a pastor. God has led you, quote unquote, according to you, because I can't judge you, led you to watch over his flock or his sheep, and you're in this position, and you forget what your whole purpose is or what you called for, quote unquote, and this begins to become an arrogance, an ego, and a power thing for you. It's to see all these people, you're way up here and they're down here, and you see all these beautiful women in different shades and shapes and sizes, and, oh, this is just a sea full of love for me, or a sea full of sex and immortality and the whole nine yards, and this is what you want, and, of course, men, too. I'm not going to leave them out. So, according to you, hey, it's all mine. I can do what I want. They belong to my church. And they explain why there's a division in the churches and why, hold up, you can't come over to our church. You don't need to be all up in our business. The reason why there's a division in the church, you know, I had a caller call in yesterday, and he was explaining to me how there's a church on every corner and how instead of having a whole congregation in one block, we got a church on every block. I don't understand that, but it happens in the Black neighborhoods. I don't know about white neighborhoods because I don't go into white neighborhoods, but I know in the Black neighborhoods there is a church on every corner. Why? I don't understand it, but that's how it is. I just don't believe that that's a calling of God. That's just me. I think it's more of a move, a business move, and a privilege move. I got the privilege and the power to do what I want because it's my church, you know. So I guess, you know, that's what I'm saying with that part. Okay. Now we're talking, I told you we're coming back today, and we're talking about historical and cultural factors and sexual abuse of power in the Black church. And this is called rapetalism. R-A-P-E-T-A-L-I-S-M. Rapetalism. Never heard of the word, but I guess Dr. Matthew is going to explain it to us. It says, The thesis of this book is that sexual abuse of power by African-American male clergy is pervasive within the black community. It is the claim of this chapter that this practice is acknowledged within the African-American churches and that it is justified by the development of an ethical discourse that has been the result of historical social context that is particular to the black community. This social context, which I have termed racialism, the combination and confluence of a history of racial, sexual, and economic oppression, has been the already dialogue partner for the development of this silencing ideological discourse, which has allowed sexual misconduct to have free reign in African American churches. A new word. We're going to look back up that word, racialism, and it's the combination and confluence of a history of racial, sexual, and economic oppression. This discourse hides the presence of the underlying psychological and ethical issues that gave rise and helped to perpetuate this abuse of power. It is my contention that the black church and black community's ethical discourse has been in reaction to this oppressive social context and has not been able to develop a liberating ethical discourse that can constrain the presence of sexual abuse. To put it plainly, it is impossible to prevent sexual abuse if it is not recognized as abuse. Let me repeat that a little. He said, it is my contention that the black church and black community's ethical discourse has been in reaction to the oppressive social context and has not been able to develop a liberating ethical discourse that can constrain the presence of sexual abuse. He's going to put it in layman's terms. It is impossible to prevent sexual abuse if it is not recognized as abuse. So if we're not saying it, you guys, it's not there. That is the way we think of things. That's the mentality we have. We don't want to say it's abuse. We want to call it everything else but what it truly is. Call a spade, that's what they tell you. The perception of this chapter is that the previously victimized black community has now adopted the rapitalistic sexual discourse of their oppressors. The black church has institutionalized the oppressive patriarchal position of their historical perpetrators. The transition from the legal polygamy of Africa into the illegal polygamy, as described by W.D. Du Bois in The Soul of the Black Folks, has become the dominant sexual discourse that promotes the abuse of power. It is analogic to the battered wife and child syndrome, writ large, in which the victim comes to identify with his or her oppressor. The image of the black preacher as father, lover, and protector only serves to reinforce a patriarchal social process in which both the victim, community and church, and the victimizer, leadership, have become unwritten partners in the continuation of sexually abusive practices. So, what he's saying here is the ideal that we don't want to recognize that this is actually happening. In Africa, it was legal to have more than one wife. But in America and in churches, in the black communities, it's another form of illegal polygamy because he is proud that he's having sex with several different women in the church. He's bragging about having sex. But there's a miss, there's a breakdown of communication between the victim, which is the community in the church, and the victimizer, which is the leadership. And they have become unwitting partners in the continuation of sexual abusive practices. Because we'd be quiet. We don't say nothing. Oh, you all up in our business, and you don't know what you're talking about. But it's happening, you guys, and we are in denial. And it's sad that we are. The following chart proposes a historical overview of the development of this sexual ethical discourse. It will be followed by a further analysis of the implication of this ethical framework. Now, excuse me, you can't see this, but I'm going to hopefully have some words, and I'm going to sort of kind of read some of this to you since I've been reading my behind off to you already. We're going to start with this first one. This is the African American ethics. The first one says, African response to tragedy before American captivity, this is pre-1619, led to the traditional ethic, providence, and faith, the Apollo Dionysio ethics, desire to maintain cultural patterns. You know what? I can't do this. I'm not going to keep reading all this to you because you have to see it. It would probably confuse you without seeing it. So that is basically, that's the historical overview of African-American sexual ethics, why we're at the point right now that we're at. That's basically what it is. It says, okay, the spiritual and the blues. Sexual ethics in the African-American community can be best be described by referring to the spirituals and blues. The spirituals represent what I call the sexual ethic of discretion. This ethic involves an emphasis on building strong traditional families according to traditional Euro-American Christian values. In the African-American community, it includes the silence on sexual matters due to issues of personal privacy and cultural safety. The blues sexual ethics, which I term an ethic of pleasure, emphasize an orientation toward the appreciation of the erotic aspects of sexual activity, which may take socially illicit forms. Both of these sexual ethics have cultural forces which promote their antinomies in the African-American community. The church, the media, the entertainer industry all has effects of sexual value and mores of African Americans. The church obviously tends to promote the spiritual sexual ethic, while the media and the entertainment industry have tended to promote the blues ethic. This does not mean that African Americans participate exclusively in one or the other sexual ethic. In fact, there is a significant interchange between the two ethical orientations. It has almost become a cliche that most popular rhythm and blues artists got their start in the church singing the spirituals and gospel music, which we do definitely know that. And that's been said. I'm saying not know that actually happened, but know that that's what they say. Okay? Now, just as there has been mutual participation in both musical spheres, the same can be said of the interchange of sexual ethical orientations. This has resulted in more than a little confusion among African-American community itself about the nature of appropriate sexual ethics. So we already established that there is a thin line, if you want to say, between both of these. Because eventually what they do is they interchange with each other, which I don't understand why, but they do. Okay. It says the Apollyon and the Dionysian ethical perspective. Now, I'm going to try to say these names. I'm not good with pronouncing a lot of things. The great German philosopher Frederick Nietzsche created similar categories in his first book, The Birth of Tragedy, in which he defined the predominant perspective that marked ancient Greek culture. He wrote about the two perspective polyene spirit, which featured the rational and orderly versus the Dionysian spirit, which was chiefly the world of the ecstatic and wild. The African-American community also has operated out of a dualism, which is the spirituals and the blues. The originator of African-American theology, James Cone, first wrote about these perspectives in ways that have not been fully appreciated or challenged by his colleagues. However, I believe that it is the power of this dualism that has prevented the development of a sexual ethic that most African Americans can recognize and accept. For Christianity represented the development of an Apollyonic moral perspective that squashed the joy and vigor of life. Its views on the renunciation of the world of sensuality was the full culmination of the Apollyonic spirit that was made manifest in the Socratic dialogues. In contrast to this perspective, traditional African culture had an emphasis on ecstasy and spirited worship, in which movement of the body was part of the worship. African culture was not without rules regarding sexuality, but compared to European Christianity, it valued the body and understood human sexuality and sexual desire as a necessity and non-sinful part of human existence, which, if you read Stolen Women, if you went along with me with that, it said the exact same thing how Africans felt about the body, the human body. Sexuality and sexual feelings were not repressed, but like religion, feelings, they could be felt and expressed within the norms of their society. And we're going to stop right there, and we're going to hear a little music. And we shall return on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman.
Hi, I'm Salita, the owner of Say Your Peace Radio Network. We would like to invite you to join our team. By becoming a host, for more information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your PIECE Network. Have you thought about hosting your own radio show? If so, visit our website at sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace Network. That's sensible64.wix.com/ Say Your Peace, PIECE Network. We will return with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita.
Hey, Devo, sing to him, baby.
Anywhere you want to go, just let me know.
In our own worlds. I want others to know that we all have a story to tell about who we are and what we are about. We as women play a very important role in life. God has allowed us to bear the brunt and bruises of so much pain throughout the world because He knew that we could survive through wars and injustices that have been geared toward us. He truly knew what He was doing when He created us. That is why they say we are the better half of the man. We as women need to take our place and stand tall, not wavering on who we are. We need not allow others to define us. We need to come together and stop putting each other down, making one another feel that they have to compete. Compete for attention, for relevance, and for substance. We have to know that we are somebody, that we are strong, resilient, intelligent, and most of all, survivors. Again, I say stand tall. Take your place in what defines you. Never let a tear be wiped away before it has a reason to be shed. Make every part of who you are represent what you stand for. You are relevant, no matter how others perceive you. You are relevant.
All right, we are back with your host, Through the Eyes of the Black Woman. I forgot what I was going to say. I kind of looked over some more stuff that we're not going to... Actually, to be honest with you, you guys, we're already finished with this book. We're at the end of it, which I think has been an awesome book. We might be able to sum it up, and then we might have to come back tomorrow and sum it up. We'll see, depending on the time. Okay. It says, in private, however, there was often a mixing of these two spiritual styles in African-American community, because we're talking about spiritual and blues. African American community, so that religious officials may have preached against the blues on Sunday, but went to hear the blues on Saturday or on the radio on Monday. This intermingling of these two spiritual styles made the development of a consistent sexual ethic problematic. For in truth, the African American community did not want to give up either perspective. Its members recognize the value of each perspective. In a true conformity to an African understanding of religion in which both are valuable parts of the whole, African American leaders found themselves between a rock and a hard place as they tried to live between the spirituals and the blues. For instance, the spirituals and the blues are both sensual music, which involve the use of the body. The African-American ring, Shout in Slave Christianity, featured the movement of the body in worship. This has transferred in the historical and contemporary modes of religious expression in the African-American community. The lively processionals of gospel choirs and the clapping and dancing and other rhythmic movement of African-American under the influence of spiritual ecstasy are testimony to the persistent power of the dancing revelry within African-American religious expression. It says, in the African-American, in the African-American, under the influence of spiritual ecstasy, are testimony to the persistent power of the Dionysian revelry within African-American religious expression. In the African-American churches, the rational need of beliefs and doctrines and strict Christian moral values are blended with the emotional fervor of a danced religion. We all know that the clapping of hands, Jesus loves them, and the hallelujah, and running all over the place, and catching the Holy Ghost, we all know. Y'all know where that all comes from, right? Okay. The blues also share this mixed message, but not to the same extent, since it was a music that did not need nor seek social approval from the larger society. The blues were born in the work games and in the dance halls and gym joints. African-American folks burdened down by life's troubles sought spiritual and emotional fulfillment through song and dance that was not only sensual, but overtly sexual as well. This Dionysian revelry was not only practiced and enjoyed by those outside of the church, but many Christian faithful also enjoyed the vitality of the blues. So they would go to the gym joint on the weekends, on, say, Friday and Saturday, get off work, we go to the gym joint. Then on Sunday, they walk across the river or get on the little boat or walk down the street or get in their cars, and then Sunday morning they in church. Hallelujah. On the front pew. All right. So that's easy to be, confused. And it still goes on today. says the open secret that you might see your church leader on Saturday at the jib joint and in front of the, oh man, that's so weird I just said that, and in the front row of church on Sunday became a common observation, which, you know, we make it up. Everyday occurrence, in other words. It says, although there were many who still subscribed to the complete separation of God's music, the spirituals and the gospel music versus the devil's music. Wow. In reality, this total separation was not possible, for even gospel music itself was born from the chord, structure, and iteration of repentant blues musicians. Yep. It was not uncommon for the worst singer and singer of the blues to include a spiritual or gospel song on their record album and musical acts. Yes, because they're trying to cater to both, the sinner and the saved. African-American churches wanted and admired leaders who had been educated and influenced theologically by the Apollinian-like nature of Christianity that separated the rational from the body, but at the same time, the African-American churches valued their religious leaders. That could combine and inculcate these two perspectives. They wanted ministers who were educated in theology of evangelical Christianity, but who were also sensual and sexual in their style of ministry and preaching. I'm sorry, that went over my head. But okay, I never thought of a preacher like that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. They did not want imitators of white Christianity to lead them by, but they also wanted the down-to-earth nature of leaders who understood why African-American folks got the blues. This attempt to have one's cake and eat it too was done without a cultural space to discuss the ramifications of these two perspectives. It was never discussed that this could happen, and the outcome of why we're where we at now with sexual abuse of power in the black church, okay? So were we confused back then? You know, we wanted our cake and eat it too, and that's why, I better keep that to myself. I better not say that. I'll keep that to myself. The internal contradiction set the stage for the present situation in which African-American religion leaders and laypersons have a great deal of difficulty in defining a sexual ethic that is true to the sensual and the spiritual. The movement from traditional African sexual ethics, which included both the sensual and the spirit, to the sexual ethic during slavery, which was based on a dualism in which blacks struggled to overcome their exploitation by improvising discretion and order, and to the blues ethic in which psychological hedonism and ethical egoism reigned, has left the black church and community ethically adrift and floundering on the shores of America's landscape. So we came in confused. We thought we were getting away from all of this, but yet and still we come back to the church and it's an underlying thing. You didn't talk, okay, you know what, we're so tired, let's don't talk about it. Let's don't bring it up. Let's don't confront our pastor about it. Let's leave it alone. And this is the end result. The task of black theological, and ethical community is to reconstruct or construct a sexual ethic that is true to the goals of love and justice in interpersonal social relationships. Another word for that is boundaries. It will not be an easy or simple task because we have had this hanging over us, instilled in us all our lives. So this will not be an easy task to set the boundaries of sexual ethics. Okay? Let's see. It says, when the traditional leaders have adopted an oppressive ideology, what hope do the masses have? It is any wonder that black males are the least and the last to develop committed relationships. There is a lack of care towards black women in the church due to the patriarchal ideology that has supported the exploitation of black women in church. I really, really love the way he said that. I believe that another factor that is seldom mentioned is the probability that many black pastors have been the victims of childhood sexual abuse as well. There is an atmosphere of the over-sexualization of black boys and men, which also contributes to this issue that I cannot address in this paper. Okay? The recent revelations of the experience of sexual abuse by luminous personalities like Tyler Perry and the continued surfacing of victims in the Penn State case will keep this issue in the forefront. This issue challenges notions of black masculinity in ways that will require further in-depth treatment at a later date. Should it surprise any of us when we hear of the continued sexual exploitation of black boys and girls in the community that has hidden its own shadow side from itself as it sought to hide its sexual activities from the gaze of the critical eyes of the hypocritical white church? What is needed is an open dialogue about sexual ethics in the black community. Even in the current concern over homosexuality in the black church, ignores the longstanding exploited patriarchal ideology that supports the exploitation of black women and children as well as its black gay community. The sexual taboo that silences the black community from discussing sex in general has also led to a silencing of the present extent of sexual abuse of power in the black church. As a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, I feel the pain of my sisters and brothers who have suffered and are suffering due to the failure to develop an even relatively adequate psychoethical understanding of sexual practices and abuse in the black community. Hopefully, we will not let this issue pass, and the church will begin to address the deep-seated ethos and ethics which allow this abuse to continue. I can see a pastor standing up in front of his congregation and explaining to them boundaries. This is nothing you have in a meeting. This is something that you address the whole congregation on a Sunday morning. You pick the time, and you pick the day that you want to do it on, and you tell them, we're going to explain to you today the reason why there is a need, a big need, for boundaries here in this church. As your pastor, quote unquote, I am setting up these rules. I'm going to say them verbally here, but my deacons will be passing you out the same rules I am talking to you right now about. And I want you to keep those rules in your Bible. So each time that we have a conversation one-on-one, and if you felt that I, the pastor, had overstepped my boundaries towards you, the member of the church, then you pick up your Bible and you go through those rules and you tell me which one I broke, because that will keep me in line. How many pastors do you think would actually do that? I don't think so. Okay? Because then you're giving the power back in the hand of the person who says you're not about to victimize me. I want to victimize you. So you know it's not going to happen. That takes away, in their mindset, the authority and power to sexually abuse you. Okay? So that, just keep that in mind. There should be written boundaries, written rules and guidelines on paper that should be given to each new member of that church. Every new member of that church should have guidelines when it comes to sexual ethics in the church. I don't care. Oh, my God. Wait. We're talking about this in church? Oh, my God. This is a Sunday. Huh? When you have young girls, young men walking out that church house in the evening after Sunday day spent at church, they're walking out of that church knowing that something has happened in between them story we started off with, where the lady took her daughter to be counseled by the pastor, and the pastor wound up molesting her. So yeah, I'm trying to figure out why are we not paying attention to this. This is very important. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. I get on my little soapbox there. And that was just a scene I saw in my head, you know. Okay. Now let's talk about this. It says right here, it says, anyone states that today's Christians must refrain from sexual immorality, solely based on the writings of the New Testament must also abide with the teachings of Jesus that states that divorce is only permitted on the basis of infidelity, a position which Jesus probably held in order to protect women from the whims of males who could divorce their spouses without due cause. The important thing to remember is that under grace, we are to base our ethical decisions on the principle of love for God, self, and the neighbor. This means that any rules, including the ones that follow, are always subject to revision based on necessities created by love. Now, we have, let's see, I think it's 8 rules. I want to make sure I'm saying this right. Yes, it's 8 rules that we're going to discuss real quick. I might run out of time, and like I said, we can all sum this up tomorrow. It says, 1, know thyself. Rule number 1 is know thyself. The ideal of knowing oneself has the primary commandment of ancient world. It has preceded the commandment to love and inextricably linked to love as the Egyptian Eohope and the Greek Socrates admonished their followers to gain knowledge of self. Who are you? How do you feel about yourself? What we call self-identity and self-esteem issues must be considered in the development of the person who wish to connect in the most intimate ways with other persons. When the Bible uses the metaphor of knowing to stand for the act of sexual activity, it is referring this ancient rule. For it is in our sexual relationships that we have the greatest possibility of knowing and being known by others. Sexuality is part of the fabric of human identity and self-esteem. We are created by the process of sexual knowing, being in love, knowledge, hatred, or indifference. We are affected by this process whether we know it or not. The best sex occurs when persons feel as though they are being truly known and held in high regard by their sexual partner. Excuse me. One must know who they are in order to be in a relationship successfully with someone else. One must understand the makeup of their sexual person. Are they straight or gay? Are they masculine or female? Feminine? How sexual are they? These matters and others involving our identity will influence the quality of the sexual relationship. We should know who we are and what we like when it comes to issues of sexuality and sexual functioning. The ability to communicate that to your partner is an essential part of the relationship. No person is absolutely masculine or feminine, straight or gay, erotic or unmoved by sexual passion. Our sexuality changes over time as well. As we grow older, we may either see the wisdom of being less sexual or grow to be more comfortable with our sexuality. As men grow older, they appreciate the more feminine aspects of their personality, just as females appreciate the more feminine aspects of their personality, just as females, are more willing to express their more masculine tendencies. The most important thing to be in constant contact of who we have been. who we are and where we are evolving in our sexual being. Rule number one, know thyself. Rule number two, thou shalt love one another as you love yourself. Agape or Christian love must be the foundation of a fulfilling sexual relationship. Christian love is the kind of love that is willing to serve others. As we know who we are, we become able to better feel the needs of those around us. Since we can know and ask for what we need sexually, we can return the favor to our loved ones. The key word is respect. This means regard for the lover and a willingness to put their needs before one's own when it's called for. We are able to honor and serve our partners, knowing that we reap what we sow. If we want love, then we must give love without conditions or reservations. Giving your mate sexual pleasure is a special part of the relationship. Communicate about what is pleasant and exciting. The use of sexual manuals, movies, etc. are important tools to accomplish this goal. Touching, loving, and tenderly is the foundation of knowing your partner. If we feel taken advantage of in our loving of one another, another person, then it is important to know this and to communicate this to your partner. As the apostle wrote, all things are possible, not all things built up and edify the spirit. It is important to feel that you receive as well give in a relationship that is mutually loving. When there are differences in attitudes about what feels comfortable, appropriate, and loving, it is important to discuss the situation and to explore options. No two people are likely to agree on everything, but there needs to be a space created where honesty can prevail. At first, I was surprised how many couples had hidden their true feelings about their partner's lovemaking in fear that egos would be bruised. Sexual relationships should be looked at as an educational experience for both parties as they travel in their journey together. It is important to at least be open to new horizons and to not be afraid of being criticized in a healthy manner. We can only learn how to please one another by stating the pros and cons of various sexual experiences. Okay, I'm going to repeat what number two was. Thou shalt love one another as you love thyself. Number three, thou shalt love thy body as a gift from God. Okay, you hear that out there? Okay. It says it is important not to fall into the historical trap of being overly spiritual or overly bluesy. The traditional sexual ethics of Africans were regulated by the sense of responsibility both economically and socially. The primary function of sexuality was to increase the human population and to give pleasure. The sexual act has the power to increase the emotional bond between partners. The pleasure of sexuality can serve to strengthen and reinforce a sense of closeness in the family. In most cultures, sexuality was permitted between persons who were economically stable and emotionally suited for each other. Those two factors of money and emotional compatibility are often overlooked in today's rush for instant gratification, so that we often choose one over the other instead of looking for both. The ancient wisdom of having families, arranged marriages was a way of ensuring that both needs were met. It is also important to shed notions that the body is nasty and sinful. It wasn't. I'm not going to read that. I have found a disturbing ignorance. I'm skipping a part, okay, you guys, that's why I said that. I have found a disturbing ignorance among African-American men and women regarding the physical, the psychological, anatomical, and physical conditions of sexual pleasure. In some cases, I've been told by young women that if they were to demonstrate a higher level of sexual knowledge than their male partners, they would be looked upon as being sexually loose. They, therefore, did not engage in sexual educational activities in order to allow their eventual mates to teach them about sexual behavior. Okay. I don't want to read more of that. Okay, number four. it says, thou shalt maintain professional boundaries. Number four is something we definitely want to look into. We got seven more minutes. Let's see what it says for number four. Thou shalt maintain professional boundaries. African-American clergy and other helping professionals must be careful to maintain appropriate physical and emotional boundaries with those with whom they have developed a close relationship with during times of personal and social crisis. One of my close friends and counselors taught me about the difficulty she observed with African-American male counselors in keeping appropriate boundaries with their clients. I have seen African-American therapists, male and female, develop inappropriate relationships with their clients as they have become more concerned with being their friends instead of their counselors. This often resulted in a lack of objectivity as the healing relationship was substituted to satisfy the needs for friendship of the client or counselor. It is important that the clergy or helping professional get their personal and sexual needs met by others so that this does not become an issue for the pastor, the helping professional, or the parishioner, which is a client. Number four is very important, and I definitely want to talk about number four. Let me mark that page. And I think it should be applause given to every new member of your church that these boundaries will not be crossed. And I promise you, I've been to a lot of new orientation classes, and this has never been talked about. There are no policies put in place dealing with sexual ethics and boundaries. Never. I have never seen one. Maybe there is one, but I've never seen it. Okay? Now, number five says, African-American men shall love African American women first and foremost. Oh, he demands. He says, number five, African American men shall love African American women first and foremost. It is an unfortunate social fact that social oppression experienced by African American males has depleted the number of marriageable African American males so that the odds of African American women finding suitable partners continue to diminish. This would not be a problem if a sizable number of non-African-American males were open to dating and marrying African-American females. But this is not the case. Non-white males are not encouraged to be open to relationships with African-American females. This attitude persists even though some small changes have occurred. Okay, he's talking about teaching on a liberal campus where students challenge each other to engage in interracial dating. Students were upbraided if they only dated persons of their own race or ethnic group. This meant that African-American males were encouraged to date non-African-American women, which resulted in most of the African-American women not dating for their 4 years on the campus. The students, in their liberal zeal, had forgotten that African-American females were already facing limited opportunities for intimate relationships due to the death of African-American men on campus, and that the white, Asian, and Hispanic males were not open to dating African-American women. These males dated non-African-American females and still met the expectations of their liberal, progressive classmates. Now, he says, it is true that you can't help who you fall in love with, but African-American men should remember African-American women have sustained us through slavery and discrimination and loved us when no one else would. Oh, let me repeat that. It is true that you can't help who you fall in love with, but African-American men should remember African-American women have sustained us through slavery and discrimination and loved us when no one else would. Now that African-American men are endangered species, African-American men should give priority to loving and marrying African-American women. This love cannot be commanded, mark that too. That is an awesome point. Number six, and we're down to 2 minutes. Thou shalt practice safe sex and only bring children into the world that you can love and take care of emotionally and financially. Oh my God, I have to stop at this one. This one is awesome. And then we'll sum it up tomorrow. Oh, you guys, this is great. Okay. We shall stop right there. Down to 1 minute. But we shall come back tomorrow and finish this book off. I'm going to throw out some points. I want you to call in and we can talk about this. I think it's talkable. I love this conversation. I love it to the end. This is awesome. What I think I'm going to do, I'm going to go read some more of this, put my points together, and we'll discuss it tomorrow. And I think I'm going to play a little bit more music because I try to play at least 8 minutes worth of music up front so that, you know, we'll get all that out the way. But I think what I want to do tomorrow is we're going to play around a little bit, relax a little bit. It doesn't have to be so much formatted as we've been doing. I'm trying to stay in the practice of making sure everything is formatted and put in the way it needs to be put in because this is a practice for me. Actually, it's not. I've been doing this for a while, but I can get foggy at times. So I want to say to you guys, I want to say thank you very much for listening in to Through the Eyes of a Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Network with your host, Selena. And we're going to finish up Sexual Abuse and Power in the Black Church by Donald Matthews tomorrow. And I want to say good night and be safe. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Selena. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.